ladies and gentlemen, friends and rivals. My name is Jared, and with me is my non-confrontational friend, Anna.
Oh, hi.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you've joined us at our table. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, we will be looking at Gnome Hollow, designed by Amon Anderson, artwork created by Amon Anderson and Patrick Spaziante, and published by The Op Games.
Gnome Hollow is a 2-4 player tile-laying game where your tabletop turns into a mystical garden of mushrooms and flowers filled with a carefree, positive atmosphere full of zen. Players take on the role of gnomes who are tasked with growing this garden, completing rings, selling freshly harvested mushrooms, and collecting trinkets and treasures, all in the hope of donning the red pointy hat and being declared the winner. Will this game grow and flourish, allowing for many treasures to be collected? Or will it wither and dry out, only to be forgotten as we roll into the next season? Find out as we discuss.
All right, Anna.
Yes.
All right, Anna.
Yes.
All right, Anna.
Yes.
I have a question for you.
All right.
Actually, I have two.
Okay.
First.
You've already asked me about collecting mushrooms on this podcast.
I know. We're not going to go that route.
Okay.
Where is your best place of zen?
Oh, man. This is the best question.
Oh!
Because I am a counselor.
Ah, yes.
And as a counselor, it is not too stereotypical that sometimes I tell people to find their happy place, which means that I need to find my happy place.
Indeed.
And so my happy visualization place is actually a real place that you and I went to when we were on our honeymoon.
Okay.
So we honeymooned on the island of Kauai in Hawaii.
That's right.
And when good thing you remember that.
How could I forget?
Oh, how nice. And while we were honeymooning there, we visited this house garden. So it was a garden designed by an artist or an architect, or I'm remembering very little about it, except for the fact that it was different kinds of plants that were grown in a way where they would make this house. So they made different rooms out of plants. So some of the plants would be the walls and some of the plants would be the ground cover. And sometimes they would have stone fountains or like little kind of plants in the middle to symbolize, you know, tables and decorations and things like that in the house. And so we got to walk through these different plant rooms in this plant house on the island of Kauai.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my happy place. When I teach visualization to my counseling clients, I always imagine that I'm there in one of those rooms in this plant house, just laying back against the philodendron and listening to the trickling of the water fountain in that one room where there was the break in the trees and you could look out and see the ocean, like kind of far away. There was like a coast kind of far away. That's the room I imagine that I'm in.
Okay.
There you go. Real zen right there.
That's perfection.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I can't actually go there very often, just in my imagination.
You know, it was interesting. I was like, oh, I was going to pick like a real place. And nope, we're just going to, I mean,
honestly,
Anna, like that answer was exactly what I expected was going to happen. But yeah, I still, you know, sometimes you can expect something and
you're still surprised.
Yeah, somehow still surprised.
Somehow. Well, tell me about your very real happy place and zen place, Jared.
Well, I don't do a good job of being zen.
No, it's true.
So that very much correlates with my answer. But I feel like one of the places I am most at peace, and I don't get to do it much anymore. One, because they're dying, and two, because I have kids. But going to the movie theater by myself it is just such a self-care moment for me. There's something so peaceful about going to see a movie by myself. I get the same small popcorn, large Coke, sit by myself, and it is just 2.5 hours of just me and the movie screen and total relaxation. I loved doing this in high school and college. I did this probably all the way up to COVID.
And yeah, then I think so. Mm-hmm.
COVID is slowly killing one of the things that I love in life. And it's still around. They're still here, but it's not the same. And so I don't get to do it very often anymore, but definitely my place of zen.
I like how your place of zen, I don't know, I'm trying to decide actually. I was going to say yours is a lot easier to get to than mine. Yours is a lot cheaper, but if mine's just in my imagination, I can go there whenever I want.
Yeah, I mean, technically yours is cheaper.
Yeah, technically mine's easier to get to.
Honestly, I feel like both of our answers really fit who we are as people.
I'm like, I'm going to go sit in a garden in Hawaii. And you're like, I want to go eat popcorn in a movie theater.
With nobody.
With nobody around. I love it.
That's incredible. All right. Well, before we get into talking about this game, I first need to note that we were given a review copy of Gnome Hollow by The Op Games. We are
very
thankful. Thank you very much. That was unexpected and a very nice surprise that was waiting on our doorstep when we got back from Gen Con. So if you are concerned about us being biased because of that, now you know that we got a review copy. But if you don't care, then
take it into account as you listen to the rest of the episode.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah. So
with that said, Anna, you wanted to take the reins on this one and tell us how to play?
I did, because this is a special game to me, because this is the one that was described to me, and then partway through the description at Gen Con, I realized, oh my goodness, the guy just said, this is why I decided to do that. And I was talking to both the designer and the
artist. Or illustrator, however they wanted to describe themselves.
Yes. And then I realized I was talking to both the designer and the illustrator of this game, and he was the one that taught me the game. So it was really special. So with that being said, Gnome Hollow.
Yes.
Is a 2-4 player game where players will take turns choosing tiles and laying them on a shared map to try and form rings of mushrooms that will give them bonuses and earn the mushrooms they can sell at the market. Play goes around in the same turn order the whole game, and each player has 3 phases to their turn. So the first phase is that a player will choose 2 tiles from a selection of 8 tiles to place on the board. And these tiles are then refreshed after that player's turn for the next player to also have 8 tiles to place. Then the player will resolve, in the second phase, any rings that are formed. Rings can be formed from 3 tiles all the way up to 7 tiles or more, and the rings will give better bonuses the more tiles were involved in making that ring. Once a ring is completed, a player will move on their player board a marker down from their board at the top down to a slot corresponding to the number of tiles in the ring that they just completed. By moving this marker, the player reveals an incrementally larger amount of victory points each time they move a marker. And depending on where they place the marker on their board, they can also potentially earn a bonus. Bonuses can include extra mushrooms from the types that are found in the ring, wildflowers from the flower collection, getting an extra tile that can be stored for future use, or getting a signpost. And these signposts will give you extra mushrooms. And there's a variation of the game you can play where the signpost will also allow you to do specific trades with mushrooms. The third phase of a player's turn is that the player will then move their gnome. Each player has 2 gnomes, and the gnomes are available for a variety of tasks. A gnome can be used to claim a mushroom path that is unfinished, which means that no other player can play on this path without that player's permission. A gnome can also visit the flower market to add a flower that's at the market to their collection, which will also incrementally give them more victory points depending on the number of unique flowers in their collection. A gnome can also go and visit a previously placed signpost on the board, which will give them those extra mushrooms on the signpost. And then lastly, a gnome can visit the pinwheel market, which allows them to sell 2 sets of mushrooms that they have collected. Now, one unique aspect of the pinwheel market that I need to mention is that greater collections of mushrooms earn greater amounts of points. But each collection of mushrooms can only be sold one time. So for example, if I sold 7 blue mushrooms, which is the largest amount that you can trade in, and I got 12 points, I would then move a token to cover that space, and no other person can trade in 7 blue mushrooms for the rest of the game. They have to choose a different trade-in value. The exception to that is that you can always sell 2 mushrooms of any kind. So gameplay continues back and forth in this fashion until all the tiles are used up in the bag, or until one player moves their very last ring marker down, meaning that they have moved 8 of their markers. At that point in time, the round gets finished, and then each player gets one more gnome action, and the final score is totaled. The final score is calculated by adding the victory points associated with the flower collections, the victory points associated with the number of rings that are made, and any treasures that were gained from trading mushrooms at the market, and the player with the highest score wins and gets to claim the coveted red gnome cap. And for a fun and more advanced variation, you can flip your standard board over and have a more advanced board that only earns bonuses for specific arrangements of rings. So in the basic game, you can make a ring of 3 tiles all the way up to 7 tiles, and it can look however weird it wants to. But in the advanced version of the game, you can only do those randomized rings one time each, and then there's specific organizations of rings and mushrooms that you need to do in order to get to move those markers down in that part of the game. And that is how you play Gnome Hollow.
So Anna, for the second week in a row, because I said this in the Parks episode last week, or Ian did, one of us started with this, I think it would be an absolute faux pas if we did not start by talking about the artwork and the components in this game.
Agreed.
There's a lot of that to talk about in this game. I will start by saying that everything about this game is dripping in theme. It is very much wanting you to feel like you are the 2 gnomes that are managing this garden.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots to pick from, but the thing that I love, and I wish more publishers would do this, having the player boards be magnetic is fantastic. I loved that with everything from the beginning. I was hooked. I was like, oh my gosh. Forget inset spots where you can place a token and it kind of sits in there. Forget bumping the table and all that stuff, just flying wherever. Magnets, fantastic. I love that addition so much.
Yeah, and it helps because you've got the 8 ring markers up at the top and you're moving them down, but then they stay in whatever prize you gain.
Exactly.
And so then you know what's left over because you can only gain 1 prize per ring.
Right.
Each time, and then you can't gain that prize another time. The next time you make a ring, you got to choose a different
slot.
Prize slot underneath there. So, yeah.
What about you? What was some of the things that really, from an artwork perspective, that you really enjoyed?
Yeah, I'd say that the artwork is probably what originally drew me into the game.
Sure.
It's very fairy tale-esque. I mean, you got these pastel colors and these cute little gnomes. You can't even see their eyes because their beards are so long and their hats are so pointy. Yeah, I mean, and it was well publicized at Gen Con too.
Sure.
With the artwork, because it was so cute. And so that was the whole reason why I went over there, got the pitch from the designer and the illustrator, and then dragged you over there later that day and was like, hey, look at this really cool game.
Yep.
Because of how cute it was. And I'll say something about the artwork. Like you said, the whole game is dripping with theme.
Sure.
I mean, even the idea that when you go and you sell your mushrooms, you get these little trinkets. You're not getting victory point markers. You're getting trinkets like buttons and keys and feathers and things like that. Another aspect you mentioned, you know, you really feel like you're these 2 gnomes going out and trying to make your mushroom rings and trying to collect your stuff. So in the instruction booklet, which is called a field guide, thematically, it's written by somebody who's been studying these gnomes and figuring out how they work. And so he wrote this instruction field guide for how the gnomes work. And then you're playing the gnomes. Each of the pairs have a little blurb about their personalities and how they work together. And so if you really want to get into theme, you can read the bio of what this naturalist's observation on your gnomes and kind of see. So last time I played Holly and Poppy,
mm-hmm.
which is this dad and daughter team. And it was kind of fun knowing and being like, okay, now Holly's going to go over here. And it was kind of fun knowing their bio.
Cool. I will say one more thing about the theme, which it's kind of funny that I'm saying this, because for me in this game, overall, it's a kind of, in my mind, it's kind of a controversial thing. And it kind of makes me have multiple different feelings about it, about the game as a whole. But from an artwork perspective, having all the different rings and the garden kind of grow out from the center stump, and everyone's kind of building and making this big thing that kind of takes over the table, gives this very cool garden vibe as you're watching it grow.
Oh, it's beautiful. I've wanted to take a picture of the end game like almost every time we've played because of how pretty it is. And I didn't mention when I was describing the how to play, but you also get these really pretty when you unlock, what is it, your second ring and your
second, fourth, and sixth
ring, you will earn a wildflower token. And that's how wildflowers get put in the wildflower market, is through these wildflower tokens. But then the wildflower tokens act like wilds that you can use to make your path go any way you want to. And they're just gorgeous also as they sit there in the middle of the ring with the little wildflower in the center. And yeah. Yeah. Like I said, pretty much every single time I've wanted to take a picture of the board at the end because it's so pretty.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, we're not interested in just theme alone.
Are you sure?
I am very sure that I don't want just a box of theme. I want a game in there too. So let's talk about the game. Anna, do you have a favorite part of this game or a favorite mechanic or things of that nature? What draws you in from a gameplay perspective?
So I'll talk about two things. One thing that caught me off guard a little bit, because I can't remember a tile laying game that I've played that was like this. So it kind of threw me off, is that the tiles don't match up perfectly. Like, you really have to pick the right tile to make the right path. So, I mean, we've played games like Turo, we've played games like Pastali, we've played other tile laying games where the tiles will match up and it's just like, what direction do you want to go? But this game, I found myself, man, I need this one particular tile to match up, or this path can't even be completed and I would have to watch for that tile. I'd have to wait for it.
And that became really crucial once we flipped to the advanced side.
Oh my goodness, it became so important. I had several rings I was working on at the same time, being like, well, once I get this tile, eventually I'll finish this ring. I think one turn I finished two, like a six tile ring and a seven tile ring in one turn, just because I had them up to that point where I just was waiting for that last tile. So that was interesting. That was unique from a tile laying game. I remember when I first got my tile and I was trying to line them up and I was like, hang on, wait a second. Like, this doesn't actually line up. I really need to figure out which one does line up. And to be honest, I don't have the greatest spatial intelligence. Mm. And so it was a little bit disorienting for me at first. Like, I try to imagine, like, how would this path line up and that path line up? And I'd almost have to take the tiles and just try it out, which was nice. And everybody let me do that.
The table was very much in agreement. I mean, we've played this game several times at this point, and we've never had a table was like, no, you can't do that.
I know. We're like, of course you would have to do that, because you've got the ones that go on the corner, you've got the ones that go straight across, sure. You've got the ones that go kind of a little bit like a third of the way across. And even those, though, they still look unique.
Yeah.
They have different flowers on them. They have different little points on them. They have, so it's good. It's natural, you know, for it to look like that. But it was a component I had to get used to because I wasn't used to that in tile laying games.
Yeah, and that's interesting because at the end, talking about the picture perfect piece of what you see, there's really only so many actually different shapes across the different tiles, but because they do look so natural, it can make you like second guess, okay, is this actually a slightly curved piece? And then you put it down, you're like, oh yeah, of course this fits this way.
Right, because even if it's taking up a third, it's not this like nice straight path that just shows that it's a third, because it's made out of little bitty button mushrooms and looks all artistic and natural, which
very
is
much
cool.
So, yep.
The other favorite component of this game is the aspect of getting to move the markers down when you complete a ring and to choose what bonus you get. I love that.
Sure.
I just raved about it to Jared for like half an hour one night, I think, because I think that that is such a more interactive way of tracking victory points than just, for example, taking your pawn around a victory point track. I thought that was a really unique way of doing it and took the aspect of victory points, but personalized it and made it to where you could choose your bonus and choose how you were going to do that. And sometimes you're getting the victory points, but you're also choosing the next kind of path and what bonus you want. So
okay.
I really like that part.
No, that's sweet. This is definitely a family weight game. And for me, I love when games will add ways of modifying the game itself within its own box and also modifying the difficulty per player. So that if you're playing this as a family game and one person is a gamer and other people are not, but they're willing to try it out, then you can help balance things out by making it more difficult for the gamer and then giving others a more streamlined option. The game does not require that all players play on the more advanced side or the simpler side. You can play on either side. And I might have to be working on a specific task while you're just trying to get the 7, which is a lot easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
And
definitely.
It allows for either kids or non-gamers or whoever to feel like they're accomplishing something and you're not just running away with it. So I love that modification to the game. I also love going to the market and only having the chance one time to sell at a certain count.
Mm-hmm.
So you can sell reds multiple times if you want to, but you can't sell it at the same count every single time. And I think that adds some strategy of there is a little bit of that tension of, can I wait another round before I go to sell? Or do I need to do it now because Anna also has a stack of reds and I want to make sure and get the extra point? And so having that decision making really adds an element for me, which in a game like this, where it's very easy to get into and it is at that more family weight, I want stuff like that that I can look at and say, okay, what am I going for here? And is waiting another round really worth it?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I would echo too, yeah, so we've played this with a couple of different people and we have some of our more like gamey friends, I think, have liked the more advanced side better because it feels more puzzly. It feels like you're trying to figure this out or whatever. But again, you could play with somebody that's a gamer and wants this more advanced puzzly aspect to the game. And then you could play with somebody that just thinks that it's zen and
sure.
fun to make mushroom rings, and y'all can both enjoy this game because it can have both those aspects played at the same time.
Yep, I completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
So we did decide, Anna, that we're gonna put this as a two-top episode. Do you want to speak into the two-player experience at all before I do?
Yeah, I mean, so we played it several times, just the two of us, because I was excited about it, before we tried to play it with more. And I remember at two players, we were saying, okay, I wonder how this is going to be with more people.
Sure.
I wonder if it's going to be more crowded. I wonder if it's going to feel a little bit more like people are taking each other's rings, because there's not a ton of player interaction in the game. But yeah, when we played with more players, it didn't feel all that different to me. And so I would say that that's why we kept it as a two top, because we enjoyed playing it with two players. And I think a game that can feel the same at two players and at more players is great for two players.
100%. Yeah, if you don't lose any aspect of the game
yeah.
with less players, then I like it because I see you a lot more than I see any of my other gaming friends. And so for us to have more options to play, I really think is a benefit. I just really think this is a good, and I know we don't always focus on just couples games or dating games, but like, this is just such a cool couples game where you can just feel like, you know, if you have to stay in for the night and play a game, you've got this zen thing where you can, you know, you can bring out a cup of tea and you can talk while you're moving your gnomes around and just have the, and just build some mushroom rings. Like, it's a super zen, peaceful time, and you just can enjoy having conversation with one another as you have your date night. So I think it's great from a couples game perspective. I like it at two. Honestly, if it doesn't change at three or four, and I like getting through this game a little bit faster than just adding extra people that are doing their own thing. It doesn't really affect me all that much. I like having the third and fourth person at the table, but if we're going to have three or four, I'd rather have something that's more interactive.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, we're just kind of enjoying being together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it kind of facilitates that.
Yeah. I would say my main thought as we were playing with three or four was, well, I guess it's nice that the tiles rotate quicker. And so I'm thinking, like, if I'm waiting for a certain tile to come up and I'm going through three or four people, we're rotating through six more tiles instead of just two more tiles. So like that was one thing that I thought, that one thought I had. And then I was like, but also the game scales accurately per the number of people you're playing, because everybody's going to take those three phases to their turn every single time. And so it took longer to get around to your turn. Anyway, it was just interesting as I was thinking. I was like, really the only benefit of playing with more people is that I see more tiles. And that's the thing is I would say a two-player game is pretty much always going to run out by people moving their eighth token down.
Yeah, you're not going to run out with tiles.
But even when we played with three and four players, we didn't run out with tiles.
We did get closer.
Well, yeah, but that's because you decided to try to finish all eight rings as fast as possible, and that was the strategy you used.
It was my key to victory.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how Jared's had fun with this game, is he's been like, let me try a different strategy every single time I play this game.
That's true. I mean, I have played multiple different ways, and I feel like I've won a lot of these games.
Yeah, so, yeah, you have. Yeah.
The fact that it has multiple ways of winning is a major plus.
Yeah, the fact that you've been able to try out different strategies and be like, hey, these are kind of equally good is also a plus.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm really pleased with that aspect as well. I mean, it's never fun when a game only has one-ish path to victory and everyone's trying to perfect that one way. So I do applaud this game for that as well. Anything else on the positives before we move on?
I touched briefly on the field guide / instruction booklet earlier, but I just appreciate the intentionality that went into it. So it's got the instructions, and then it's got this story that it tells throughout as well, separate from the instructions. So if you don't want to read the story and you don't want the fluff and you just want to get to the directions, that's fine. You can do that too.
And to be clear, the fluff it's not in the rules.
No. It's these little notebook pages scattered throughout.
On the sides.
But if you are interested in the theme, which I think with a game like this, the theme makes it fun. Yeah, that's the whole point you're playing it, is kind of for the theme. It has these little notebook pages scattered throughout the rule book that tell this story. And at the end, they even name all the different mushrooms and name all the different wildflowers, like a field guide, like a naturalist's journal. And so just want to, again, put another kind of props out for that. And really, the other thing I want to say is that the components of the game are beautiful. So, I mean, the signposts are little wooden signposts that stand up. I mentioned the trinkets and the mushrooms, and the game box is very well organized. It's very well stored. It's already got an insert that has everything you need in it. And the bottom of the insert even has the label as to what goes there. Like, it's got a little mushroom picture where the bag of mushroom tiles goes. I don't know. I like a well-organized with good components.
I'll piggyback off of that. It's one thing to have a good insert. Man, it is next level when you identify easily how everything fits in that insert, because not all inserts are clear, even if they're a good insert. And so when I can just look and see the little picture at the bottom, that's great. I really love that little tidbit. I don't know how much that costs for a publisher, but I wish more would do it.
And if you're going to play this with kids, then it lets them be able to put the game back correctly, which is nice too. So,
well, theoretically.
Theoretically. Yes. Makes it more likely that they put the game back correctly.
That's true.
Okay. So yeah. But my biggest thing that I like about this game is just that it feels peaceful. It looks pretty. I have lost almost every single game that you and I have played, except for the first one. And I have still enjoyed every single game that we have played and haven't been angry at you the whole rest of the night. So, you know, it's good when that happens. And it's just because of the theme. It's because I have still felt like I've created something beautiful in the game, even when I've lost.
No, I think that's great. And I will say too, I am not this way, but if you are someone who enjoys, well, I guess I am to some degree thinking about some of the games that I like, but I much prefer player interaction. If you are into a solitaire experience, I think this game will really sing for you, because even though you're all playing on the same board, And I think I want to mention this here because it was helpful for me. I mean, I'll go ahead and say, after my first play of this, I really did not like this game. I think I went into it expecting something different than what it was.
Yeah.
And so knowing how it plays, I really had to kind of adjust the way that I look at it, adjust my mindset, and revisit it basically for the first time again, because it is, there is zero confrontation. You literally can't. People trust me, I have tried. I have tried every way I can think of to engage in Anna's rings or some other player's rings, and you just can't do it. Outside of the wilds, where you can do it, but there's almost never a reason where you'd want to do it, because you can't claim anything without your gnome being on it. And if you let someone else jump onto yours, almost always it is a thing where they are benefiting way more than you are. So even though you can give permission or you can receive permission, it just doesn't happen very much. So it is very much you're building your rings, they're building their rings. The most interaction is going to be on the marketplace where you're losing potential spots to sell and in which tiles are taken, because there's only so many tiles at a time. If you are into solitaire type games, it's not a single player experience, which I'm kind of blown away by. I really think they could have incorporated a solo play structure for a game like this.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because you're already almost there anyways, I feel like. And that's just my opinion. But maybe, I've played it enough that it's no longer just a feeling. I really...
Jared, gnomes are communal creatures.
I know.
You need to have other gnomes that you're chatting with at the market and working together.
Listen, we're kind of transitioning into things we might have not liked as much about the game. But I just, while we're here in the positive, I do want to say, if you like a solitaire-esque experience where there's other people at the table, but you're all doing your own thing, this is a good game for you.
Yes. And I will say that was something that pretty early on, Jared was like, wait a second, we're playing on the same board, but we're hardly interacting. And
that's right.
It kind of grated on him. And so for the next like three games that we played, he was experimenting with all these different ways of like, how can I turn this into what? So my words were, Jared was really trying to say, how can I turn this into a screw you game?
No,
and I'm like,
no,
Jared, we're building gardens. Quit trying to turn it into a screw you game. That's not what it's intended to be. But yeah, he tried like trying to block me by going on the side of a ring that like I was obviously going this way to complete the ring. But like he went on the next tile that I would have had to connect with. So I couldn't do it. Oh,
I tried so many things.
Oh, he tried several different things.
I wasn't trying to screw anybody over. I was just trying to
screw people over.
No, yeah. No. I was trying to see how the game could be more engaging, where you're actually interacting, messing with other players, but in a way that like it's a give and take. I don't know. Again, it took me a game or two before I could even like get why we were playing on the same board.
Because it's pretty.
The more we played, the more I was like, okay, this is a game that is prioritizing theme over everything else.
No, it has that really cool victory point system and stuff too.
I'm not saying it's not. No, no, hold on. I'm not saying it's not a game. I'm not saying it's just there for theme. I'm not saying that. But it does prioritize theme first, and that's fine. And there is a game. I'm not gonna lie. There are times I get really into it. And I'm working really hard to complete my mushroom ring shapes. But I mean, I can enjoy a Zen game. And so it just requires a little bit of a tweaking of your mindset when you go into this game to play it.
Well, and because you interrupted my story.
I'm so sorry.
Go ahead and say that there is an aspect. Like Jared did, for example, block me when he went on the next tile that I would have connected with my ring. Like I was going that direction. There was a tile that was already laid that the next tile laid would have connected with that one.
Sure.
And then when he went there, he did block me and I wasn't able to connect that. But then that meant that his gnome was stuck there
Yes.
and not able to do anything either, because for him to lay a tile would mean connecting to mine. And so that's what he means is like, he was trying to make this interactive thing, but that ended up being bad for him as well. Because then we were both stuck in this standoff until one of us decided to move, and eventually he did.
Which I did. I moved like one turn later because I was like, "This, there's no point to doing this." Because well,
and there was another time that that happened that we were saying, okay, no, you can ask for permission to place a tile. So what if I place this tile that makes that that differentiates the paths, you know, and mine can go down and yours can go the other way. And he said, okay, sure, you can place that tile. But then he still didn't feel like it was beneficial to him in the long run. And so eventually kind of, I guess Jared just decided. And then you were trying to be like, well, I could place a wildflower token without your permission. So let's do that. But anytime you place a wild on somebody else's ring, that's just going to help them.
That's right.
Not actually going
to
hurt
them. It doesn't
them.
Do anything to them.
Yeah. And so, so there's all these different ways that Jared was trying to be like, can I make this game more player interactive? And the conclusion was, anything you do to make it more player interactive, you're just kind of like sabotaging your own strategy in the process. So why would you do that? Just focus on your own strategy.
Yeah. I think it's not even a thing. Like, cause there's games where you can hinder the other player and it will cost you something to do that.
But it'll also benefit you.
There's a benefit to it. This is just straight, you're wasting your time. Like, you're on your own doing your own thing here. In my experience. If Amon is listening to this podcast and wants to tell me I'm wrong, I'm all ears. I would love to know how
Explain
this game is super interactive.
And if it's going to be interactive, yeah.
So anyways, we've been on this a lot. So let's move on. Do you have anything? This is your game of Zen. Do you have anything that you don't necessarily like about this game?
Oh, good question. Okay, let me think. No.
Big shock.
It does not bother me. I know that your main negative thing is the lack of player interaction, but it does not bother me at all that you're playing on the same board, but still constructing your own stuff. And there is a little bit like I can look over and see, because some rings don't just continue one path. They have two paths or three paths even on them. And so you're still scanning for other areas of the board. Like if Jared lays down a path that completes his, but it also starts another one, then I might go over there. You know, I feel like you still have to keep an eye on what the other person's doing. Same thing with, for example, the purple mushrooms are much more rare. And so I might try to get a purple tile so that Jared can't. Or I might notice, hey, Jared already has a ton of purple tiles. Maybe I don't worry about collecting them because I won't get enough to trade in, you know? So there's an aspect of watching what the other person is doing.
Sure.
Even though you're working on your own rings. So, and I know you're not interacting, but you're still paying attention, and it being on the same board, I feel like is still beneficial because of that.
And I know I said we're going to move on, but I'll say this. I would be foolish to say there's zero interaction. I understand. Like I have to keep an eye on what you're doing. You are taking spots away from me on the main board. I get all that. It just feels like it should be so much more because we're all interacting on this board together and for the type of game that it is. And it's cool. It's fine that it's not. Once I kind of, by game 4 and 5, especially when we got to the advanced map, it did not bother me anywhere near as much as it did the first two plays.
Okay.
I still wish it was what I was expecting, I guess, but I'm really, especially, and I think you really loving it helps, but I'm cool with it, what it is.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, is there anything you feel like is lacking other than the player interaction that you were expecting?
I don't know if this is fair. I've thought about this. It might just be our play styles. But whether it's at 2 or at 3, I feel like, so you get 8 to pick from in the available tiles.
Yeah.
I feel like no matter what player count you're at least half of that board just becomes stale and just sits there and nobody wants to use them. I don't know. I feel like that's just the way that we play. Like if we play differently, that might not be as big of an issue. But if you have similar strategies as the people that are at the table with you, then you're going to just be praying that the tiles that come up on your turn to replace the ones that were taken previously are the right tiles. And if they're not, go ahead and be prepared to pivot because you're just going to have to. if you want to keep playing, especially on the advanced board. Because like there's certain tiles that there's only so many of in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I need to complete that one, then I'm either going to wait for that one to come up, or I just have to be like, well, I guess I can't make that one this game.
But I didn't find it all that hard to pivot, even on the advanced board.
No, and that's fine.
Because I'm thinking of, and honestly, what you're describing of feeling like the board went stale, for me, I felt like that never lasted more than like two rounds. Because after two rounds, I would have decided to say, okay, fine, there's a lot of corners available. I'll just build this shape that has a lot of corners, or I'll just go over here and make it to where the corner turns into just like a wiggly zigzag and keeps going, sure, or whatever. So I agree that there were sometimes that I looked at the board and I was like, man, all of these are this type that I don't want right now or whatever. Because technically there's only those three types of paths. You got the corner paths, the third paths, and the split in half paths. But then sometimes you've got more than one of those per tile.
And you have to connect every route.
Yeah. So you can't play something that turns a corner but then dead ends another straightaway that's going through the tile or whatever. But yeah, I think that there were several times I looked at the board and I thought, man, there's only corners or whatever. But that never went on for rounds and rounds and rounds where every turn I felt like I wasn't getting it.
And you're right that you can pivot quickly. And it's really not that hard. It's more of a bummer because, I don't know, I guess it's like what you talk about sometimes with your city building games where you're like, it just feels so cool to finish and have built this.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, especially on the advanced board, I'm like, I want to build this one, but I can't build this one because the tiles are just not showing up.
Right.
And
yeah.
I'm more interested in winning than I am waiting for this tile to show up so I can build it.
And that's an aspect of it where it was a little bit more player interactive when we played on the advanced board, because we were in really close quarters as we started to build. And so I started to build a pretty big, like seven tile one, and then yours scooped down just far enough that I wasn't able to build that big seven tile one because I didn't have the room to do that anymore. And so that was an interesting aspect of when you're trying to build specific shapes, you need to make sure not only that the right tiles come up, but you save enough space around where you've started.
Yeah. You were really stressing on a couple of them.
Oh,
that's
dude,
for sure.
There were several of them that I would start and then Jared would come into my space because he was trying to be all interactive and stuff.
Only Jared. Jared's the big bully.
Well, because you're the only person. It's a two-player game that we're talking about,
I know,
Jared.
But there are other games where other people were bullies too. I'm just saying.
All right, fine. Whatever.
Anyways. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to look at it through the lens of what it is. Truthfully, as someone who really relishes the midweight to the mid-heavyweight, I would not want to play this game all the time. Like, eventually, I'm going to get bored of this game, and that it just is what it is. Now, if we want to play it as a date night every now and then, I'm totally cool to do that. Like, no problem. But if this game started hitting the table all the time, it would not hold my interest. For a family weight game, it's going to be a lot of fun for a lot of families and a lot of couples and a lot of whoever's that like that weight.
Yeah.
So I want to be careful about that because it is my perspective, but for who the game is geared towards, I would say it has a lot going for it. In that light, I want to be careful about just kind of take my comment there with a grain of salt.
Yeah, it's not a heavy game, but there are a lot of people that I know that I would play games with that don't like heavy games as much.
100%.
You know?
Absolutely.
Or like you're saying, for a date night when
we're tired and we just
want to have 4 hours to devote to Battlestar Galactica or whatever.
Wow. That would be an interesting date night.
I don't know if you could play that two-player. Sorry. That was a bad example.
We're like double-handing it and lying to ourselves. That'd be great.
I don't know that the other person I'm playing is the betrayer.
Wild.
Anyway.
All right. that's derailed. But I hear your point. Like, your point is totally valid.
That there's a lot of time, situations, and people.
Yes.
That you don't need those heavy games for. And I agree. I think this is an excellent game for a more lightweight game. that isn't totally random either. You
it's
know,
not,
sometimes
it's
you
not.
Get those lightweight games and they become frustrating because there's like, okay, well, this is fun, but there's no strategy. And that's not true at all about this game. There is a good amount of strategy for a lighter weight game, which I think is one of the things that I liked about it.
I mean, there's a lot there, especially for the weight that it is. And there's a lot of, like I said at the beginning of talking about mechanics that we liked, there's a lot of flexibility in it. And I think that's really good. I would put it on par with Parks, which we talked about last week, as far as heaviness and things going on with it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I don't want to critique it too badly. I really don't. So with that, let's we're coming up against the clock here. So let's talk about a few things. This game, and I'm just going to say it, this game does not travel well.
It's got way too many parts.
It
barely fits on our specific game table.
We've got a 4x6 table here, and it takes up a lot of it.
It does. And depending on which way you build out from the stump, we end up shifting things around even mid-game because sometimes you build too far in one direction.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and it's like the game starts out smaller, but then as you grow, it becomes this huge thing. And which is cool. Like, it does cover the whole tabletop essentially for the most part. And you got this big card in front of you, but it also means it can only be played so many places.
Yep. Those of you that have card tables at home, just, you know, get two of them.
Yeah.
Play on the floor. You know, it's going to take up a good amount of room.
Have TV trays on the side for your own player board because you're going to need.
That's a good choice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh man. No airplane game on this one.
No,
sorry.
No
tray table. All right. What about, so there's no expansions yet because it's a brand new game.
But there's the two variations that are in the game of being able to use the signposts also to make trades and flipping over the player board for the advanced track that creates the patterns instead of just the tile number.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll talk about price point. So the game itself is in the $50 range. It's mostly everywhere I've looked, it's pretty much at $50.
Yeah.
And then you can buy an upgrade kit for $25, which turns all of your flowers and mushrooms into wooden pieces as opposed to the cardboard that you have.
Flat wooden pieces or 3D wooden
they
pieces?
I mean, we don't have it, so I can't say for certain, but based on the picture I'm looking at...
I just need to be able to roll little mushrooms around and make them be 3D in my hand. That's what I need.
Okay, so you do get the mushrooms. They are slightly 3D. I mean, it's not like an actual mushroom piece.
Okay.
It's the exact same thing as the token.
It's just wooden.
It's just wooden.
Okay.
And it's a little bit thicker.
Cool.
Looks like.
Cool, cool, cool.
So that's $25.
Okay.
So let's talk about the base game.
I was going to say, we haven't gotten the upgraded components, so I don't know if we can necessarily speak to them.
So base game at $50. You do get a lot of pieces. You do get the wooden signpost, which is nice.
Yeah. And the magnetic boards and
the magnetic boards. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So do
and
you
the,
think
the insert? I mean, people will pay $15 bucks for an insert like that, and it comes with that insert pre-labeled and everything.
That's right.
So
I think the bag's okay. It's just a bag for the tokens. The tiles. I'm sorry, I keep saying tokens. So $50. Do you feel like it's a good buy?
Yeah, I think it has enough components to merit $50 for sure.
If we spent $50 on this for a date night, I would not be upset about that.
Yeah, for sure. Any other thoughts about that?
I think 50 is a fine buy. I think they did really well with this. The gnomes are wooden as well. So they move around the board and they kind of stand out.
And they're painted. And so, like I said, they're different characters. So it's not just...
Yeah.
An outline of a gnome that's a different color. You have like the face and the clothes, and it's an actual character that you can read about in the field guide.
That's right. So I think $50 is a fine price for everything that you get in the box. I mean, I would pay $15 just for the magnetic boards by themselves because they really are. There was a point where we were like mid game, and someone else asked me about the other side of the board, and I just felt so cool with all these little pegs on there, being able to just pick it up. Look at the backside of it and then put it back down and nothing and move. That was a really cool experience. All right. So that's price. Let's get into grading and final thoughts. You want to go first? You want me to?
You can go first.
All right. I think it's 7. I think if the components were not as good as they are, which make the game really easy to play, it'd probably drop down to probably closer to 6.5. The components really add to it, which again, needs to, because it's leading with theme. Like that's its primary before you get into the game behind it. And I'm not saying there's not a game there, but it is really leaning into the theme, which is fine. It's great. If you're a newer player, I will just go ahead and tell you, this is probably closer to an 8 for you. If you are someone who loves lighter games, someone who is going to play with family, if you're looking for a great date night game, it's an 8. I'll just say that. For me, it sits between that 6.5 to 7 space. I think it's fine. I think that I will be happy to play it when Anna suggests that she wants to play it. I'm probably not going to suggest that it comes back out on my own. But again, I'm not going to be upset if Anna or a small group wants to try it out. If any listeners were like, hey, I want to go try this, and you were over at my house, like I'd be happy to try it with you, and I would not have a bad time. But
you're saying it wouldn't be your first pick for your date night, but you enjoy it, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Your thoughts? Before you say anything, I'm like genuinely wondering if we're about to experience our first 10.
What? Why?
I think you'd like watching you play this game, and this is an endorsement for
it. It's happy.
Like you just, your whole face lights up and you get in this giddy mood, and it's really cool to watch. Like I love it for that. So I'm curious what you're about to say.
It's a happy game. I don't think I'd give it a 10 because I don't think that, I don't know. I was going to give it a 9 because I wouldn't call it like my favorite game. So that's why it's not getting a 10.
I didn't mean to trip you up, but I figured 9 is the floor and there's a chance she says 10.
Well, I was debating an 8 too.
Interesting.
But I think I'm going to go with a 9 just because, again, I can't think of anything wrong with it. I mean, even as you're saying, oh, it's a lighter game, in my mind I'm thinking there is a good chunk of strategy. You're strategizing how to lay these tiles. The tiles don't fit perfectly. You've got to think ahead. You've got to do spatial reasoning. Then you've got to strategize where you're going to move your pegs down, because turns can kind of compound and build on each other. So like if you get extra mushrooms, then you move your gnome to the mushroom market. You want to make sure you've got the ones that are going to be the sets. Or if you get a tile later on that's going to add to a path that you're making later on. I feel like there's a good amount of compounding and thinking ahead that you do even as you complete a ring and as you're choosing the bonuses. I think there's a good amount of strategy in this game. And just because it feels light, because it's a garden theme and you're moving gnomes, and the turns are pretty straightforward and the steps are pretty straightforward. There's very little in the game left up to chance other than the tile flips. And we had already talked about that with the tile flips, you can pivot pretty quickly. There's enough other choices often to be able to pivot with what shape you're making or whatever. So yeah, so I don't know. I'm going to push back because it feels like a later game. It goes a little bit faster. It's a little bit easier to get into, but I think there's a good amount of strategy once you get into it, which I like. I also am the type of person that likes games where you're kind of building your own stuff. Now, you don't get to build to the point that you're doing a ton of different stuff by the end of the game as you were at the beginning. It's not that type of kind of city building or building mechanic in the game. But you are building because you're getting more victory points, you're amassing your flower collection, et cetera, as you go through. So I think that's why I would give it a 9. You look like you're contemplating your life.
I don't know. I mean, it's been a really fun discussion, even though we're really up against the clock. And as I was debating, like responding to it or just letting it be.
Yeah, because you're sitting here like, oh, it's such a light game. Oh, it's such a light game. Well, like, we're sitting here playing Old Maid or something. And I'm there is a lot of strategy in this game.
I don't want to come across like that.
It's just not heavy strategy.
I think the thing I disagree with what you said is that I don't feel like I'm doing a lot of strategy when I play this game. I feel like I just kind of take my turns as they come. And I work with the best of what I've got. Now, there's tactical decision in that, of that moment. But the rest of it, even in a two-player game, I just kind of shrug and I'm like, it might be there, it might not. when it gets back to my turn. And the only thing, again, I
would disagree that there's not strategy in being able to assess the immediate options that you have and make the best decision. Just because you can't plan several turns ahead because the tiles keep rotating in and out and you don't know what's going to be around your turn, doesn't mean that there's not strategy. I think there is strategy in being able to see, here's my path, here's my tiles, here's the choices that I have left for paths I can make and benefit from. What's my best choice right now? There's still strategy involved with that.
Again, sure. I hope I'm not coming off as critical as what I'm hearing you saying I am. Because...
No, I just wanted to argue with you on the podcast.
All right, well, here we go.
Because we've been arguing for like a week straight about this game already in real life.
So we've been discussing
not arguing.
I don't know. I think it's just one of those things where we just don't agree. And
we don't.
That's okay. I actually like that. I don't want us to both have the same opinion about a game. So I really have enjoyed this episode and I've enjoyed the different perspectives. And I hope that's helpful for listeners who will have different levels
who
of
want to
desire.
Argue with your spouse.
That's right. Get Gnome Hollow and have arguments on your date night. What a tagline. I'm just kidding.
No, yeah, you can't have too many arguments because there's not a lot of confrontation in
it
the game.
It is very non-confrontational. That's been the ultimate irony of this episode, is it's supposed to be non-confrontational, and we've been a little bit confrontational. That's okay. That's all right. I don't know, man. I think I would endorse you trying out Gnome Hollow. I would endorse, if you are someone who likes medium to less weight games, to give Gnome Hollow a try, even maybe purchase and just give it a try.
Or tell Jared you want to play it at the next game night we host.
Yeah, absolutely. Hit me up. I'll play a game with you. Again, if someone else suggests it, unless we play it all night, I'm just not going to be upset about it. Well, no matter how long this episode is, whether it's the hour 10 that I'm looking at right now or if it's a little bit shorter, I appreciate...
Because you delete all your redundancy.
That's right. I really appreciate all of you for listening, and I appreciate Anna giving a different perspective on the podcast. With all that said, if you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com or shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. All these links are in the description. 5-star reviews, subscribing your podcast player of choice, following us on social media, if that's your thing, and joining the conversation on Discord. All these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art, to Anna Snyder who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexei Chistolin for the How to Play background music. Join us next week at the feature table as Ian and I discuss Distilled by Paverson Games. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Farewell.
And happy mushroom rings.
Okay. That sounds weird.
And happy gnoming.
That sounds better.
Nice.